الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على إمام الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. اللهم أرنا الحق حقا وارزقنا اتباعه وأرنا الباطل باطلا وارزقنا اجتنابه. Brothers and sisters in Islam, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome back to this another of our sittings. We will be covering the 42 lessons from the slander of Aisha. Yesterday we covered the slander of Aisha, but we didn't pick out the lessons from the slander of Aisha. Also, we had a debate with the Shiites in the sister room, cancers in the body of Umar. I don't think many people heard about that debate. And I think tonight they will be coming to take us on a second time. It will be the third time. So those of you who would like to learn how to debate with Shiites, you can come to the sister room, Cancers in the Body of the Ummah. 3 a.m. UK time, the Shiites are coming, okay. Also, we would like to invite the Madkhalis, the Saudi Salafis, for a public debate as well. And then we call down the curse of Allah on the person who is lying about Allah and His Rasul. So not only should we debate with the Shiites publicly, we have to debate with the Saudi Salafis publicly, as well as the goofy Sufis, those who believe in Wahdatul Wujud, or that the Prophet is alive in the grave and you can pray to the Prophet, and that Allah is everywhere, Allah is not over the arsh. All these people have to be debated publicly. Gone are the days in which you can deceive unsuspecting Muslims. Those days are gone. If that's your business, deceiving unsuspecting Muslims in regards to their aqidah, we are going to debate with you publicly and refute you with Quran and Sunnah. So last night we debated the Shiites in regards to who should be the first caliph, Abu Bakr or Ali, and we debated with them in regards to many other things which I cannot go into right now. If you want the CD, asks the admins for the sister room, Cancers in the Body of the Ummah. We covered the slander of Aisha, and Allah said in the Quran that the slander of Aisha, it's something good. Don't think it's a bad thing. It was good for you. Now, many of you will be shocked. How can Allah say something like that is good? Surah 24, verse 11. Consider it not a bad thing for you. Nay, it is good for you. Many of you, when you read this verse, you will say, how can Allah consider a slander a good thing? Well, the answer is clear. If a person slanders you, it's an investment. Because on Judgment Day, they have to give you all their good deeds. On Judgment Day, the slanderer will have to give you all their good deeds. So when a person slander your name and accuse you of being a gay, a lesbian, an adulterer, a fornicator, an adulterer, a gay, a lesbian, and these slanders are always sexual in nature, because people pay attention if sex is mentioned. When a person slander you, it's an investment, because on Judgment Day, the person has to give you all their pious deeds. This is the reason why Allah said, the slander of Aisha, do not see it as a bad thing, consider it a good thing. I have in front of me 42 lessons from the slander of Aisha. The Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam was going to the battlefield and he draw lots to see which wife he should take with him, and Aisha's name came up. So the Prophet took Aisha with him to the battle of Banu Mustalaq. So the very first lesson you learn from this is that the Prophet didn't practice favoritism. The Rasul was very fair with his wives. He had 9 wives, and he practiced fairness with his wives. Because when he was going on a journey, he drew lots. And whichever wife name came up, he would carry that wife with him on the journey. So no wife can say she was neglected, because women are easily offended when they think that you prefer one over the other. The second lesson, a woman is allowed to go to the battlefield if she gets the permission of the Amir. The Prophet didn't take Aisha to a place where you have sightseeing and picnic. He took her to the battlefield. So the second lesson you learn is that you can take a woman to the battlefield if she gets the permission of the Amir. The third lesson is that the marriage with Aisha and the Prophet was arranged. An arranged marriage can be very successful if the woman wasn't forced in the marriage. Aisha was happy in her marriage with the Prophet. The Kuffar, they like to talk about the marriage of the Prophet Aisha. Even though she was happy in her marriage, they make it their concern. So an arranged marriage can be very successful if the woman wasn't forced into the marriage. So you should always make a difference between a forced marriage and an arranged marriage. In the West, people don't make a difference, even though there is a vast difference between forced marriage and an arranged marriage. The fourth lesson, it is not the sunnah to return to your wives at night. When the Prophet was returning from the battle of Banu Mustalik, he encamped on the outskirts of Medina and he slept over that night, and he did not go home until in the morning. So the fourth lesson, why did the Prophet encamp on the outskirts of Medina and he did not go to Medina and go home to his wives at night? The answer is, it is not the sunnah of the Prophet for you to return home to your wives at night. Because whenever you are coming back from a journey, your wife would like to dress up for you, to wear sweet perfume and makeup to greet her husband. How can you see her beauty wearing makeup if you go back at night? So it's not the sunnah of the Prophet to go back home at night, and because of that he encamped on the outskirts of Medina and slept the night, and then he went back home in the morning. The fifth lesson is, you should make 70 excuses for your Muslim brothers and sisters. When the Sahabas put the Hawdaj is the small tent, on the back of the camel, they thought Aisha was in the Hawdaj. The scholars of Islam said Aisha was not fat. So because she wasn't fat, they thought she was in the Hawdaj. And the camel went and they left her behind. Aisha didn't blame the Sahabas for leaving her behind. Aisha didn't blame the Sahabas for leaving her behind. She made excuses for the Sahabas. They left her behind because they thought she was in the Hawdaj. Now, they were traveling with the Hawdaj on the back of the camel, and they thought Aisha was inside because they didn't speak to Aisha. The sixth lesson, the Sahabas minimized their interaction with women, so they did not speak to Aisha. The seventh lesson, we are to be cool, calm, and collected. Aisha was cool, calm, and collected. She didn't panic when she got left behind. The eighth lesson, don't be so quick to blame others. Safwan ibn Mu'attal, who found her, did not blame others. Don't be so quick to blame others. When there is a mistake, try to address the problem rather than pointing fingers. The ninth lesson, do not abandon your Muslim Ummah when they are in danger or in need. He was a man of God, of taqwa. So the wisest was for him to bring her back to the Prophet, and he walked. Well, here it says he walked in front of the camel. Do not abandon your Muslim Ummah when they are in need. Some people, they abandon Muslim brothers and sisters when they are in need. Safwan ibn Mu'attal didn't abandon Aisha. He allowed her to ride on his camel and he brought her back to the Prophet in safety. And when the hypocrites of Medina saw her coming back on the camel of Safwan, Chinese whispers, the rumor mill started to spin. Why did Safwan and Aisha return by themselves? It's quite clear they stayed behind to commit zina. This is the slander that started by Abdullah ibn Ubay ibn Salul. He was the one who started the slander. He started the slander because he hated the Prophet, because the Prophet took away his throne. He became the king with no throne. Before the Prophet migrated to Medina, they used to call him King Salul. But when the Rasul went to Medina, it overshadowed his influence. So because of that, he went on a path of hypocrisy. And he did not forgive the Prophet for taking away his kingdom. So he thought by slandering Aisha, he will get back at the Prophet. I will take my revenge by slandering Aisha. I'll get back at the Prophet by slandering Aisha. This was his calculation. Now, the tenth lesson, people will slander you to get back at your family. That is the tenth lesson you learn from this story tonight. People will slander you in order to get back at your family. Because Abdullah ibn Ubay said to himself, if I slander Muhammad, I will get back. If I slander Aisha, I'll get at Muhammad. I will use Aisha to get at Muhammad. Because he was always an enemy of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he died in that state. Abdullah ibn Ubay. There is no D at the end. Abdullah ibn Ubay, the grand hypocrite of Medina. When someone is down, that is not the time to discuss important matters. When Aisha was sick, her mother didn't break the news to her that she is being slandered in Medina. Because if she came back from the battlefield with a strong fever, how can you tell her the hypocrites are saying you had an affair? That's a burden more than Aisha can bear. So look how wise the mother of Aisha was. She didn't break the news to her. When a person is sick, you shouldn't break bad news to them. That is sickness on top of sickness on top of sickness. So this is the 11th lesson. When somebody is down, you should not discuss matters and break bad news to them. Number 12, it is wise to have sabr. Part of wisdom is to have sabr. The Prophet did not rush to conclusion. The Prophet had sabr and wait for Allah to clear her name. So the companions of Muhammad, the ones with taqwa, they did not rush to accuse Aisha of having an affair. they had sabr. So, sabr is important in the midst of a crisis. The Arabs like to say, if something is in the pot cooking, if you wait, the contents of the pot will boil over for you to know what's in the pot. That's what an Arab saying. If the pot is on the fire and you are anxious to know what's in the pot, just wait until the pot boils over. Then you'll know if it's milk in the pot or molasses or something else. It will boil over for you to see what's in the pot. Or porridge, cornmeal porridge, oats porridge. So sabr is very important in the midst of a crisis. The Prophet didn't jump to conclusion about Aisha. He waited and waited for Allah to clear her name. Number 13, a real Muslim can fall into a big sin. That's the 13th lesson we learned. It's possible for a real Muslim to fall into a big sin. Now, Mr. A real Muslim can fall into a big sin. Yes. Now, Mr. was one of those who fought at Badr. Even though he fought at Badr, he got caught up in the slander of Aisha. Those who fought at Badr, they will be in paradise. So those who fought at Badr, they were all promised the paradise. But Mr. got caught up into the slander of Aisha. Now how did he get caught up? When they mentioned the slander of Aisha in front of him, he smiled. All he did was to smile. Now, if somebody is accusing somebody in front of you, you're not allowed to smile. You're supposed to say, Ittaqillah, fear Allah. I don't want to hear this. I want to protect my ears. I don't want to partake in your slander, your backbiting, your gossip. Not many Muslims have the taqwa to speak like this. If 100 Muslims hear a gossip, 99% will listen. Because people gravitate towards gossip and rumors. Why? It is called entertainment for free. There is a newspaper in the UK called the Sun newspaper. That newspaper specializes in which MP is having an affair, which senator is having an affair, which football star, which movie star, which singer is having an affair, and who is his lover. And that newspaper is the fastest selling newspaper in the UK. It is called a tabloid. A tabloid newspaper is a newspaper that specializes in gossip. The Sun newspaper is the fastest selling newspaper in the UK because people gravitate towards gossip. And if the newspaper is talking about sex, it sells very fast. So whenever a person have an affair in the UK with a very important person like a football star, an MP, they always go to the Sun newspaper and sell the story for $1 million. When the Deputy Prime Minister, John Prescott, had an affair, the woman went and sold her story. She even described to the newspaper the length of his genitalia. So when he went to the parliament the following day, all the MPs were laughing at him because they know the length of his genitalia. Because the newspaper printed it. So people gravitate towards gossip. And the gossip is more exciting if it is to do with sex. Because sex sells. So whenever a person comes to you with gossip, you don't have the taqwa to tell the person, Ittaqillah, don't backbite, don't slander, because on Judgment Day, you have to give away your good deeds to the person you're backbitten. If 100 Muslims should hear a backbiter, 99% will entertain the backbiter. 99 out of the 100 Muslims will listen to the backbiter and encourage the backbiter to continue. Why? Because when you listen to gossip, it is called entertainment for free. Now, this Sahaba who fought at Badr missed her. When he heard people slandering Aisha, he didn't repeat the slander. All he did was to smile. He didn't defend her honor. What makes it difficult for Abu Bakr to swallow is that this man migrated from Makkah to Medina and he was penniless. Abu Bakr was rich and Abu Bakr used to give him money because he was a cousin of Abu Bakr. So Abu Bakr used to give him money, financial assistance. Yet when you heard that Aisha was slandered, you didn't defend her honor. Yet her father used to give you money. And Abu Bakr Siddiq said, Wallahi, I will never give him money again. Because he did not defend the honor of my daughter, Aisha. And Allah revealed Surah 24, verse 22. وَلَا يَأْتَلُ وَلَا الْفَضْلُ مِنْكُمْ وَالسَّعَى أَنْ يُؤْتُوا وَلَا الْقُرْبَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ والمهاجرين في سبيل الله وليعفوا and let not those among you who are blessed with graces and wealth swear not to give any sort of help to those kinsmen, the masakin, the needy, and those who left their homes for Allah's cause, they made hijrah. Let them pardon. وليعفوا وَلْيَصْفَحُوا Let them pardon and forgive. Do you not love that Allah should forgive you? And Allah is the most forgiving, the most merciful. Now when Allah revealed the ayah, Abu Bakr Siddiq said, I want Allah to forgive me, so I'm going to forgive Mr. for participating in the slander of my daughter. And he continued to give him money. Look how merciful Abu Bakr as-Siddiq was. Now Mr. got 80 lashes. Mr. got 80 lashes and Hamna bin Jash as well as Hassan ibn Thabit. These were the three who got 80 lashes. So you can be flogged 80 lashes just for one smile. You can be found guilty of kufr or apostasy just by one smile. If you are at a dinner table and somebody said Muhammad was a fraud, a false prophet, and you smile, you become an apostate, a kafir. Did you know that? You are at a dinner table and somebody said Muhammad was a fraud, a false prophet, and then you smile when you heard it, you become a kafir. You have to retake your shahada. You have to make tawbah. So you can commit an act of kufr or apostasy just by one smile. Something that many of you might not have known. The 14th lesson, verbal abuse can be deadlier than physical abuse. Aisha was verbally abused when they accused her of having an affair, and she fainted when she heard. She dropped down and fainted when she heard that they accused her of an affair. And who brought the news to her? The mother of Mr. Because she stepped on her jilbab and fell down, and she said, may Allah curse Mr. Aisha was sticking up for him. How can you say that about a man who fought at the Battle of Badr? And then the mother of Mr. brought the news to Aisha. The people are saying, you had an affair and Mr. partook in the slander. When she heard, she fell down and fainted. She fainted. So the other lesson you learn from the slander of Aisha is that verbal abuse can be deadlier, more lethal than physical abuse. So you have two men, one beat up his wife and the other one called his wife a prostitute. You are a slag and a prostitute, a hoe. And the other one beat up his wife. the one who called his wife a prostitute is worse than the man who beat up his wife, because verbal abuse can be deadlier and more lethal than physical abuse. That is the other lesson we learn, because when Aisha heard about the slander, she fainted, and when she went to the toilet, she couldn't pass out anything. Her body became numb. She cried until her lungs almost exploded, and when she went to the toilet, she couldn't pass out anything because her body became numb as a result of the verbal abuse that she suffered from the hypocrites. And the Rasul said, the real Muslim is the one in which the other Muslims are safe from his hands and his tongue. Al-Muslim, man salama al-Muslimun min lisanihi wa yadi. The real Muslim is the one in which the other Muslims are safe from his hands and his tongue. So for you to be going around slandering Muslims, accusing them of zina, fornication and adultery, you need to be careful, because the people you are slandering, if they don't forgive you, Allah will never forgive you. You are only making Hajj and Umrah and fast in Ramadan to give it away on Judgment Day. You are only fasting in Ramadan and praying Salah, making Umrah, making Hajj to give it away on the Day of Judgment. That's all you are doing. Because these people you are slandering, if they don't forgive you, Allah will never forgive you. You are at their mercy. And according to my understanding, most Muslims won't forgive you. If you accuse a Muslim of having an affair, 99% of the Muslims will never forgive you. So be careful, protect your tongue and your private parts, because the Rasul said, what will cause you to be in the hellfire the most is your tongue and your private parts. The other lesson we learn is the great status of those who fought at Badr. Lesson number 15, the great status of those who fought at Badr. All of them will go to paradise. And the Prophet said, the 1,400 Sahabas who gave me the bay'ah underneath the tree, all of them will go to paradise as well. All the Sahabas who stretched their hands forward and gave me the bay'ah, the oath of allegiance, underneath the tree, at the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, all of them will be in paradise as well. Number 16, the taqwa of the female Sahabas. The taqwa of the female Sahabas. Mister instinctively took side with Aisha and didn't take side with the slanderers. So the attitude of Mister, she took side with Aisha, not her son. She didn't gang up with her son against Aisha. It proves the taqwa of the female Sahabas. Number 17, when Allah Ta'ala puts a curse on you, it comes to pass. Whenever Allah Ta'ala puts a curse on someone, it comes to pass. Now those who slander Aisha, a curse was put on them. People like Abdullah ibn Ubay, and they died as Munafiqeen. And Allah told the Prophet in Tawbah 84 to pray over Abdullah ibn Ubay was a mistake. When the Prophet stood up to pray over him, Umar grabbed onto the shirt of the Prophet and was pulling the Prophet. Umar went into a frenzy and said, how can I pray over this man, O Messenger of Allah? He was a hypocrite. And the Prophet smiled and prayed over him. And Allah corrected the Prophet in Tawbah 84. ولا تصلي على أحد منهم مات أبدا ولا تقم على قبره إنهم كفروا بالله ورسوله وماتوا وهم فاسقون. This ayah came down to correct the Prophet. Umar was right and the Prophet was wrong. Shiites wouldn't like to hear this. A Shiite would be offended to hear me say this. But tonight we are going to debate the Shiites. We debated them last night and we aren't finished. The damage hasn't been done properly. So you are invited to the C room, Cancers in the Body of the Ummah, to hear the second leg of the debate. I think that will be the third leg of the debate with Shiites. The damage hasn't been done properly. They need to get the knockout punch. So I would appreciate if you come and we have people from this room, admins, who will be there to provide the hujjah. To provide the hujjah against the Shiites. Number 18, pain and sorrow can cause your body to become sick, physically sick. That is the 18th lesson. Pain and sorrow, emotional pain and sorrow can cause your body to become sick. If you are depressed, you can have tumor or cancer from the depression. Emotional pain and sorrow can cause your body to become numb. Because Aisha became sick, she could not pass out anything when she went to the loo to answer the call of nature, because her body became numb due to the slander. When the slander broke, she asked permission. When the slander broke, she went and stayed with her mother. Number 19, in the time of crisis, you need your family. Many women, when they get divorced, they go back to their family for comfort. I've seen many sisters, when they get divorced, they go to their family for comfort. So in the time of crisis, you need your family for your comfort. When Aisha was accused of having an affair, and the Prophet was behaving cold towards her, and she did not know why the Prophet suddenly started to behave cold towards her, she asked permission to go and stay with her mother. She did not know why the Prophet was behaving cold. So she asked permission to go and stay with her mother. The Prophet used to visit her, but the visit was very brief. When he came to see her, his visits were very, very brief. Number 20, when a young girl faces a crisis, she needs an older woman to give her advice and counseling. So you, the young girl, maybe you got married age 20, 21, and you are having a crisis in your marriage. You need an older woman, like a woman in her 50s, to advise you how to deal with the crisis. A young girl, when she faces a crisis, she needs an older woman to give her comfort and counsel. And this is what Aisha did. Number 21, you need a good relationship with your mother. Every Muslim girl needs a good relationship with her mother. You are not allowed to be at loggerhead with your mother. But in my opinion, a girl needs a father more than a mother. That's my opinion. In my opinion, a girl needs a father more than a mother. Because I brought up a stepdaughter who is now 22, and she was closer to me than her mother. So I'm speaking from my personal experience. Loggerhead means to differ with each other. Loggerhead. Loggerhead, that is the word. It means when you differ with each other. You can't agree. You are bickering and quarreling with each other. Look at me. I am in this halqa picking out 42 lessons from the slander of Aisha. Every Muslim, past and present, is very sad about what took place. Even you, who is living in the 21st century, you are sad about the slander of Aisha. But Allah said it was good what happened. It was good. Look, I'm picking out 42 lessons from the slander of Aisha. Okay, look at lesson 22. Look at lesson 22. Even Muhammad did not know everything of the ghaib, the unseen. He, Muhammad, did not know everything about ilm al-ghaib. Because he was behaving cold towards Aisha when the rumor broke. And he said to Aisha, if you are innocent of the rumor, Allah will clear your name. And if you did have an affair, then make Tawbah. Tawbah means repentance. And Aisha was crying and said to her mother and father was present. And she said to her father, first tell the Prophet I didn't have an affair. And Abu Bakr Siddiq kept quiet and said, today is a day I don't want to speak. Then Aisha turned to her mother when her father refused to give a verdict and said, tell the Prophet I didn't have an affair. And her mother said, what can I say to Rasulullah? In other words, he is getting revelation every day from above. I am an ordinary woman. What can I say to Rasulullah? So neither her mother nor father said, you are innocent, you didn't have an affair. Lesson 23. When you are the leader of an ummah and you face crisis, consult your loved ones. So when the rumor broke, the Prophet consulted two sahabas, Ali ibn Abi Talib and Osama ibn Zayd. Osama, the son of his adopted son. And Ali said, you don't need the grief. There are many other women. In other words, you can get rid of her. You don't need the headache. There are many other women. And Osama said, I don't know anything about Aisha except what is good. So Osama took her side, but Ali didn't take her side. There are many historians who believe that when Aisha picked up arms against Ali, is because Ali did not take her side when she was slandered. When the hypocrites of Medina slandered Aisha, Ali wasn't there for her. So when he became the caliph, she picked up arms to topple him and to put somebody else in his place, Zubair ibn Awwam, the cousin of the Prophet. But Ali won that battle. It's called the Battle of the Camel. What I'm saying to you is something which Shiites write in their history books, and some gullible Sunnis believe it. You are not allowed to believe what I've just said to you, because it is dhan, an allegation, an assumption. And Allah said, "Inna ba'da dhan ithn." Some dhan is a sin. Some suspicion is a sin. The reason why Aisha fought Ali is because he delayed punishing those who killed Uthman. That was the reason she gave. He delayed to punish those who killed Uthman. So we have to go along with what Aisha said. But as for saying that she fought Ali because Ali did not support her when hypocrites accused her of having an affair, this is something the Shiites write in their history books. And we don't take our religion from the Shiites, because they slander as well. They slander as well. And tonight when we debate the Shiites, we will touch upon the slander of Aisha. Number 24, when you hurt a man's wife, you hurt the man himself. Because remember, when the Prophet heard the rumor, he gathered the companions in the masjid. And they said, somebody has slandered my wife. The person accused her of having an affair, and the man they said is her lover, Safwan ibn Mu'attal, he migrated from Mecca to Medina. A sincere Muslim who migrated from Mecca to Medina. And the Prophet said, I don't see anything negative about the character of this man, Safwan ibn Mu'attal. Yet people are saying, my wife did an act with him and he's her lover. And then the Sahaba said, kill him, kill him. Now who is the man who was hurting the Prophet? Abdullah ibn Ubay. So the lesson you learn is that when you hurt the wife of a man, you hurt the man. If you slander a woman, you hurt her husband. If you slander a man, you hurt the wife. So you can't hurt one without hurting the other, wife and husband. If you make one happy, you make both happy. If you make one sad, you make both sad. You can't separate the man from the wife. They are emotionally attached towards each other. Abdullah ibn Ubay knew this. That's why he thinks, if I slander Aisha, I will get at Muhammad. This is what he thought. The other lesson we learn, lesson 25, the shaitan runs in our veins the way blood runs in our veins. Isn't that so? The shaitan runs in our veins the way blood runs in our veins. Because when the news, when the rumor spread that Aisha had an affair, somebody said, his name is Usaid ibn Hudayr. Oh, Messenger of Allah, if the man is from my tribe, I will kill him. If he's from the other tribe, which is called Al-Khazraj, command me and I'll do what you want me to do. I will kill him as well. Sa'd ibn Ubadah said, the reason why you want to kill Abdullah ibn Ubay is because he's from my tribe, Al-Khazraj. I'm sure if he was from Al-Aws, you wouldn't say, kill him, kill him. He said, you're a liar and a munafiq, and you are protecting another munafiq like yourself. Wallahi, I will kill the man who slander Aisha, whether he is from my tribe or another tribe. I don't care which tribe he's from. I will kill him if he slander the wife of the Prophet. And the Muslims in the masjid were about to fight each other. Tribalism. The days of Jahiliyyah were coming back. And the Prophet had to quiet them down. So keep quiet and settle the matter amicably, properly, peacefully. Aisha felt very bad that because of her, the Muslims were about to fight each other in the name of tribalism in the masjid. Aisha felt very bad about this incident. That because almost the Muslims fought each other on the grounds of tribalism in the masjid. So this proves to you that the shaitan runs in our veins. And if you're not careful, you will make decisions based on racism and tribalism and nationalism and regionalism. You have to be very careful. The shaitan can use asabiyya to manipulate you. Asabiyya. What is asabiyya? Racism, tribalism, nationalism. Almost the shaitan succeeded in using asabiyya to manipulate the sahabas in the masjid, in front of the Prophet. Why the shaitan almost succeeded? Because the shaitan runs in our veins the way blood runs in our veins. So this is the 25th lesson. The 26th lesson is, the shaitan has the ability to use asabiyya to split up the ummah. The shaitan has the ability to use asabiyya to split up the ummah, because the Rasul said, there are four things my ummah will never give up. The first one is asabiyya. The second one is seeking rain from the stars. The third, to wail over the dead. And the fourth, boasting over your lineage. These are the four things my ummah will never give up from Jahiliyyah. So the shaitan has the ability to use asabiyya to divide the ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The 27th lesson. The 27th lesson is, when you hurt a Muslim, you hurt the whole ummah. Do you remember when Aisha was slandered? One of her best friends went into the house and was crying with Aisha. She felt the pain as well. Her friend. Her friend wasn't slandered, but she went to the house of Aisha and cried with Aisha. Because when you hurt one Muslim, you hurt other Muslims as well. Because the Muslims are like one body. When one part of the body is affected, the whole body feels the pain. Number 28. Before you start a conversation, give salam first. Because before the Prophet started to speak to Aisha, he gave her salam first. Number 29, be slow to accuse and be swift to forgive. Be slow to accuse, be swift to forgive. Number 30, when you are in crisis, seek an ayah from Al-Quran to guide you. When you are in a crisis, use an ayah from the Quran to guide you. When Aisha was in a crisis, didn't you see she quoted an ayah from the Quran? Surah 12, verse 18. She said, I will say what the father of Yusuf said. You are accusing me of having an affair. I will say what the father of Yusuf said. So what did the father of Yusuf say? It's found in Surah 12, verse 18. Bal sawwalat lakum anfusukum amran fa sabrun jameel. Wallah al-musta'an ala ma tasifun. Your evil souls cause you to concoct a lie against me. Fa sabrun jameel, sabr, patience is the most beautiful thing for me right now. And I seek the help of Allah to expose the lie that you fabricate. This proves to you the scholastic of Aisha, how scholastic she was. That she was able to quote an ayah from the Quran and put her tawakkul in Allah. She quoted the ayah and put her tawakkul, her trust in Allah. Whenever you are in a crisis, always rely upon an ayah. If you are going through difficulties, remember the ayah, فَإِنَّ مَا عُسْ يُسْرَى, after hardship comes ease. If you can quote an ayah from the Quran to help you in a crisis, it shows that you are a scholar. It shows your scholasticism. Number 31, only Allah can help you in a crisis, so put your trust in Him. Like what Aisha did. Only Allah can help you in a crisis, therefore put your trust in Him to clear your name. 32, the Holy Prophet had emotions like us. The Prophet had emotions just like us, because when Aisha was slandered, he was behaving cold towards her before the revelation came down to say she did not have an affair. Number 33, sometimes delaying a matter is a wise thing to do. Some of us will be an arm's length from paradise, but we enter the hellfire. Among the actions and good deeds for which a believer will continue to receive reward after his death, knowledge which he taught and spread, a son which a daughter he leaves behind to make dua for him. The biggest rival of Aisha was another wife, Zainab bint Jahsh. And Aisha considered her her biggest rival. Lesson 34, our taqwa saves us from calamity and catastrophe. Lesson 34, our taqwa saves us from calamity and catastrophe. The biggest rival of Aisha was Zainab bint Jahsh, because she was beautiful and she was a cousin of the Prophet. When the rumor spread, the Prophet approached the biggest rival of Aisha and said, what's your opinion on this matter? And she defended Aisha. She said, I don't know anything about Aisha except good things. Aisha said, she was my biggest rival, and the Prophet approached her and She said, I'll protect my eyes and my ears. I don't know anything about Aisha except good things. Aisha said, because of her taqwa, because she feared Allah, she was not among those who were destroyed. Now, these are important lessons for Muslim women to take lesson from. They think polygamy is a war. It's not a war. A woman of today would gang up against her co-wife and slander her name. Because the women of today are living in Dajjal societies, in which it turns you into a low-life scum of the earth. Darul Harb. So when you live in Darul Harb, it makes you become reckless with your tongue and your private parts. You need to live in Darul Islam to protect yourself from diseases of the heart. A woman of today would jump and slander Aisha because she would try to get rid of her co-wife. But look at Zainab bint Jahsh. What did she say? I will protect my eyes and my ears. I don't know anything about Aisha except good things. Aisha said because of her taqwa, Zainab bint Jahsh, she was not among those who were destroyed. Her taqwa saved her. Subhanallah. This is why it's important for those of us like myself who teach Islam to teach the life of the Prophet's wives so that the women can learn taqwa. The life of Khadija, the life of Aisha, Zainab bin Jahsh, all these wives of the Prophets, so that the women of today can learn taqwa. Because taqwa is lacking in the Ummah. So after finishing the sealed nectar, I would like to do the wives of the Prophet, so that the women folks of today will learn taqwa. And whenever you see a person reckless with their tongue, they are also reckless with their private parts, because these two organs are interwoven. Lesson 35, polygamy is not war. Polygamy is not war, and because of that, the co-wife of Aisha came to her defense. The women who live in Darul Harb, they think polygamy is war. And when they come into the relationship, they try to break up the man from his first wife. They come into the relationship to break up the man from his first wife. Because when you live in Darul Harb, it makes you have disease of the heart and it turns you into a low-life scum of the earth. Now, polygamy is not war. Look at the behavior of Zainab bint Jahsh. The other lesson we learn, and this is lesson 36, don't interfere in the affairs of others. Hamna bint Jahsh was among those who slandered Aisha. She thought if she get Aisha out of the way and get the Prophet to divorce Aisha, the affections of the Prophet will go towards her sister. The affections of the Prophet will go towards her sister. So let me slander Aisha to get her out of the way, so that the affection of the Prophet will go towards my sister, Zainab bint Jahsh. But Zainab bint Jahsh didn't ask anybody to fight battles for her, because polygamy is not war. So Hamna bint Jahsh made a mistake. Her sister Zainab didn't ask her to fight battles for her. Why? Because polygamy is not war. When I was on tour of Nigeria in the year 2008, when a woman gives birth to a child, her co-wife cook for her. Wash and cook for her, her co-wife. The women who are living in Darul Harb, they can't do these things. In Darul Harb, if a co-wife cook for the other wife, she will poison her. Because when you live in Darul Harb, it causes you to have diseases of the heart. And it turns you into a low-life scum of the earth. She would poison her co-wife in Darul Harb. When I was on tour of Nigeria, and a woman should give birth, her co-wife cook for her, wash for her, until she got back on her feet. This is what I saw in Nigeria. A woman in the West can't do that. Because when you live in Dar al-Harb, it causes you to have disease of the heart. You think polygamy is war, and it turns you into a low-life scum of the earth. Number 37, sometimes revelation comes down in piecemeal to solve problems. Sometimes revelation comes down in piecemeal, little by little, to solve problems which the Prophet encountered. So whenever the Prophet encountered a problem, the revelation would come down in piecemeal to solve the problem, to answer the problem. When Aisha was slandered, the Prophet did not know what to believe until Allah revealed Surah Nur verse 11, and Allah said it was an ifk. What is the meaning of the Arabic word ifk? Ifk means a big lie, a slander. Allah called it an ifk in the Holy Quran, Surah 24, verse 11. Lesson 38, when Allah loves you, He tests you. And the more Allah loves you, the bigger the test. That is lesson 38. When Allah loves you, He tests you. And the bigger, the more He loves you, the bigger the test. Whenever Allah loves you, He tests you. The bigger the love, the bigger the test. The more Allah loves you, the bigger the test. What happened to Aisha was a test. Lesson 39, a munafiq likes to slander the believers. The hypocrites, they like to slander the believers. That is lesson 39. Whenever a hypocrite slander your name, there is no point you forgive him. Because Allah will never forgive a hypocrite. So there is no point in you forgiving a hypocrite. The Prophet didn't forgive the hypocrites who slander Aisha. You only forgive a real Muslim. There are some people who come and Paul talk and said, Sheikh Faisal has a child out of wedlock. I feel sorry for these people because I'm not going to forgive them. They have to give me their good deeds on Judgment Day. And if they don't have any good deeds to give me, they have to take away from me all my sins. You want to say Sheikh Faisal had a child out of wedlock? Go ahead and say it. That's my investment. I'm not going to forgive you. You shouldn't have been reckless with your tongue to begin with. If you believe in Allah and Judgment Day, you wouldn't be so reckless with your tongue. Now these people have to give me their good deeds on Judgment Day. If they don't have any good deeds to give me, they have to take away all my sins. That's my investment when you slander my name. Why do munafiqeen like to slander people? Because they don't have no character, no image, no reputation, and they are jealous of your deen. A munafiq, not only do they slander Muslims, but they steal the wealth of Muslims as well. You can't give them money to keep, they're going to steal the money. And you are supposed to expose the munafiqeen to the Muslim community because they will steal your money and slander your name. A munafiq likes to slander the believers because they are jealous of your deen. They want to take away your izzah, your honor. Because you don't smoke, drink, gamble, fornicate, do drugs, they are jealous. Because they dabble in these shameful things. So they slander your name because they are jealous of your deen. 41, that is number 30, number 40, 39. It is impossible to purify a munafiq. When the Prophet, number 40, there are times when we must be purified. There are times when we must be purified. There are times when we must be purified. That's number 40. So the Prophet flogged those who slandered Aisha, the Muslim ones, to purify them. Number 41, it is impossible to purify a munafiq, so the Prophet didn't flog the hypocrites. Because on Judgment Day, their punishment will be doubled. So when you read the seal nectar, you wonder why the Prophet didn't flog the hypocrites. Because it is impossible to purify a hypocrite. So why did he flog the believers? to purify them. They slandered Aisha, so they needed to be purified. So they were purified with the flogging, 80 lashes. You can't purify a munafiq, so you let him be. Leave him to Allah for Judgment Day to sort him out. Number two, a good friend does not kick you when you are down. The lesson 42, a good friend, a sincere friend, doesn't kick you when you are down. When Aisha was slandered, what happened? One of her best friends went and sat in the house with her and was crying with Aisha, giving her moral support. A real friend, a sincere friend, doesn't kick you when you are down. These are the 42 lessons. I will pause and take 5 questions from the topic, the 42 lessons from the slander of Aisha. I will pause and take 5 questions in regards to the darsi you have just heard. Not because I picked out 42 lessons, that doesn't mean that it's only 42 lessons. I picked out 42 as a mercy for you, because I don't want to drag the darsi too long. Question number 1, Muslims' good deeds are given away to those whom they slander. Yes, that's the case. What happens to kafirs who slander? What do we get when they slander us, when they slander us, as they are already going to the hellfire? Don't you know what you get? The Prophet told you what you get. On Judgment Day, Allah will take away from the Muslims their sins, their zina and their khamar, and put it on the scales of the kuffar and dump them into the hellfire. Bring me the hadith, please. On Judgment Day, Allah will take away from the Muslims their sins, put it on the scales of the kuffar and dump them in the hellfire and send the Muslim to paradise. Bring me the hadith. I learned it from the lips of my sheikhs. Next question. Have you found the hadith I quoted? Abu Musa reported that the Messenger of Allah said, when it will be the day of resurrection, Allah would deliver to every Muslim, a Jew or a Christian, and say, that is your rescue from the hellfire. Okay, shukran for the hadith. Allah will put the sins of the Muslims on the scales of the kuffar and dump them into the hellfire. Oh, there's a second question. A sheikh I was visiting with my family discussing Sharia. They claim Sharia gave birth to democracy. Please explain the reality of this. And this sheikh is Jahil. Sharia doesn't give birth to democracy. Democracy means the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Sharia is the government of Allah, for Allah, and by Allah. You cannot say Sharia and democracy is the same thing. This sheikh has a problem with Aqidah. He wasn't taught Aqidah. Maybe he learned fiqh, but not Aqidah. Democracy is the greatest shirk, and you are not allowed to say Sharia gave birth to democracy. Democracy came from Greece, Demokratos, which means the government of the people, for the people, by the people. And the MPs, the senators, they are the legislators, the lawgiver. In Sharia, it is Allah who is the legislator, the lawgiver. And when we have a dispute, we refer the matter to Quran and Sunnah. In a democracy, when there's a dispute, they put up their hands and the majority has the say. When John Major, the British Prime Minister, won the Maastricht Treaty, he won by one vote. Only one vote. Democracy has the say. The majority, democracy is majoritarianism. That's not the case. In Sharia, when there's a Shura meeting, we go along with the opinion which is the closest to Quran and Sunnah. We don't put up our hands. So when Abu Bakr Siddiq held a meeting to fight those who didn't pay the zakah, even though the majority of the people, everybody in the meeting said we cannot fight them, Abu Bakr pushed forward his opinion until they bowed to his opinion. That is our understanding of the Shura. Democracy and Shura are two different things, they are not the same. Okay, I'm taking 5 questions. Where are the others? Okay, here is a hadith which the admin brought to refute democracy. 2 men from the tribe, and I entered upon the Prophet. One of the 2 men said to the Prophet, O Allah's Apostle, appoint me as a governor. And so did the second. The Prophet said, we do not assign the authority of ruling to those who ask for it, nor to those who are eager to have it, keen to have it. So this refutes your argument of democracy. Democracy is majoritarianism. And Allah told you, if you obey the majority, they lead you astray. So how can people say Islam is democracy and democracy is Islam? This person has problem in his aqidah. This person has issues, aqidah issues. Surah 6116 refutes democracy. وَإِن تُطِعْ أَكْثَرَ مَن فِي الْأَرْضِ يُضِلُّوكَ عَن سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. And if you obey most of those who are on earth, they lead you astray. How can we purify ourselves after committing a sin or may have negate our shahada? The only way to purify yourself is to make sincere tawbah. There is no other way but to make sincere tawbah. If you negate your shahada, you have to make tawbah, and when you make two rak'ah of tawbah, by you reciting the tashahud, you have retaken the shahada. But you have to make ghusl when you come back into Islam after you committed apostasy. Because the Prophet commanded new reverts, people are coming into Islam, to make ghusl. This is Hanbali fiqh. That when you come into Islam, you have to make ghusl. Tawbah is the only way to come back into Islam after you have committed major kufr or apostasy, which is called ridda. Okay, I'm taking 5 questions. Where are the others? This is the ayah. If you obey most of those on earth, they will mislead you far away from the path of Allah. This is the ayah to refute democracy, because democracy means the majority has the say. And Allah told you, if you obey the majority, they lead you astray. And there is no such thing called Islamic democracy. Okay, I'm taking 5 questions. Where are the others? Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. A Muslim asks fellow Muslims after the Friday prayer in the masjid for dua for his deceased mother, who passed away a day before, but unfortunately many Muslims left him alone and refused to offer dua, probably fear of committing bid'ah. What is your opinion about this? Jazakallah khair. They should have made a dua for his mother, because it is not a bid'ah to make dua for somebody who has already been committed to the grave. Because a black woman used to sweep out the masjid of the Prophet, and when she died, they buried her without telling the Prophet. And when the Prophet asked about her, they told the Prophet she died and they buried her. The Prophet went to her grave and did janaza over her while her body was already committed to the grave. So it is not bid'ah to pray, make dua for somebody whose body has already committed to the grave. These people, they acted out of ignorance, and it's very unfortunate that they didn't pray for the sister. That seems to be the last question. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.